October 25th, 2013, it's the Drupalize Me Podcast. Drupalize Me. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. I welcome everyone to the Drupalize Me Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Hoffmeyer. We've got a great podcast here today, mainly because we've recorded it twice, but yeah, you'll learn about that. We normally cover some announcements, but we don't have too many announcements. I guess the big thing is Badcamp is going on, so hopefully everyone is having a great time. I'm sad that I couldn't join, but yes, Badcamp is happening right now, so besides that, let's just get this thing rolling. All right, well, welcome everybody. Here we go again. We are re-recording this podcast because as I put out in a blog post, we missed one of our deadlines. I think actually they're probably the first deadline the Drupalize Me podcast has missed since we started this because we had a recording failure. I was recording and we did not have a backup recording. And somewhere in the midst of that recording, I have no idea how, but the audio got all garbled up and was in slow motion. And I don't even know what it did or how it did it. But so we're doing this again. And I thank my guests who were gracious enough to come back, and I'd like to introduce them now. We do have some Lolbots, and we have some new guests that before was their first podcast or second podcast with us. Now it's their second and third podcast, so redos can sometimes help out. But today I'm here with
Joe Schindler
and
Bumpy.
I'm also with
Alex Bronstein,
and finally
Larry Garfield.
All right, Alex and Larry, again, I can't appreciate it enough for you guys to come back. But again, the entire point of this podcast is, well, we got together because, again, we were all in Prague and everyone was starting to get really pumped up and get really, really excited for Drupal 8. So we decided to have a podcast and talk about some of the things on the horizon with Drupal 8 and mainly what all of us are starting to get excited about and what it is about Drupal 8 that is intriguing us and that we just can't wait to start using. And it shows how excited we are because we're going to do it again, and we're going to all say exactly what we said and come up with more stuff, because I'm sure that podcast could have just kept going because everyone is actually pretty excited for Drupal 8, and we're here again to just start talking about it. So, I mean, we're going to kick in, and hey, Joe, you want to maybe start us off and tell us what you are most excited about with Drupal 8?
Sure, I can do that. This is funny, too, because last time we started, and I was like, yeah, I know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to say blocks are my favorite thing. And then it's been a week, and in the interim, I've had to do a bunch of research for a webinar about Drupal 8. And after all of that research and doing a webinar about it, I still think the fact that blocks are fieldable is one of my favorite things in Drupal 8. I didn't know about this until DrupalCon Prague. I learned about it there. It's one of those, in the back of my head, I had wanted for a number of years now, but having blocks be like first class entities in Drupal and the ability to add fields to them is super exciting to me. And I think it's just, I can think way back to like Drupal 5 era, trying to build sites where I needed to put a simple image in the sidebar, you know, maybe like some kind of internal advertisement or something, and all the hoops that you would have to jump through in order to make it easy for someone that didn't know HTML. And how to use something like FTP or that kind of thing to add an image in a block. And you would do these crazy things like create a block that had a node embedded inside of it because the node had an image field on it. So someone could click the upload button and upload an image to the node and it would get displayed in the block. Now you can just add that image field right directly to a custom block type. And I think that that's going to be a really cool feature.
And correct me if I'm wrong, now blocks can also be reusable, correct? So you can actually use the same block in multiple locations and things.
I don't actually know the answer to that.
I think that is true.
Yep, that is true, yes.
Yes, so blocks now in Drupal 8 pretty much eliminated quite a few modules just with blocks. So yeah, no, that was one of the things I was pretty excited about too. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
One word of caution on that is that custom blocks are fieldable, meaning, you know, like a block that that you add your, you know, completely your own content from scratch on. But like functional blocks provided by modules, so like a views block or a you know, who's online block, those are not fieldable. But you can still do a lot of things, you know. But you can still achieve most of what you want in your presentation by just like, you know, having your views block, and then either above or below it having a custom block that's fieldable. So it's not a huge limitation that functional blocks aren't fieldable, but just wanted to clarify.
It seems like it still is going to solve most of the use cases that I can come up with in my head for wanting to have fieldable blocks. And especially like you mentioned, if you kind of have a couple of them and stack them in the right order, you can achieve pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, basically, everyone knew blocks and core sucked. And so there were lots of different solutions in contrib, all of which essentially did the same thing. There were panel panes, fieldable panel panes, bean, I think like two others. And all of those just collapsed into, hey, blocks and core now does everything we wanted them to in contrib, so now we don't need to do it in contrib anymore. They're just awesome out of the box.
Yeah, it's great. I was speaking of blocks, I was taking some screenshots of the new block administration page in Drupal 8, and it was a nice reminder for me, like, how much the admin UI has improved in Drupal 8. And it's an interesting, like, it's not like it's been completely redone and we have a whole brand new interface, but there's been all of these really great incremental improvements, and a lot of them are really simple, and you might not notice it right away, but once you do, it's like, oh, you mean I don't have to remember to write this magic string with the word none into the title of a block so that it doesn't display? I can just check a checkbox. Like, wow, that makes sense. Having those kind of improvements is awesome.
Yeah, the architectural changes in Drupal 8 gets most of the press, but you know, there is a lot of work that's gone into, you know, incremental polish of the interface and other front end capabilities that may not get as much press, but I think are just as important, certainly for certain classes of users.
Actually probably the part I'm the most excited about is just that polished look. Like I'd mentioned before, when I first installed Drupal way back in the day, I just installed it and didn't even attempt to learn it because it was, to me, it was just so hideous. I mean, even the installer was terrible. And I tried a different CMS and stayed that way for a little bit and then realized, obviously, it may look ugly, but it does a heck of a lot of cool stuff. So I went back to Drupal. But now, I mean, even the installer, just it looks like modern web pages today. So, I mean, just the UI of every admin page looks better. I mean, even if it's just from small drop shadows to slightly rounded corners, it's not getting any press, but it definitely, it's a big improvement, but yet not, I mean, so much that it changes the way people use it. So, I mean, I'm very excited that it finally just looks like a great CMS and not only looks like one, but is obviously a great CMS. So, yeah.
We've really, I think that as a core community, we've really expanded our front end community a lot with this version. I mean, we started doing it with Drupal 7. But I think we brought a lot more really great front end developers sort of into being core contributors with the work that's gone into Twig and the work that's gone into HTML5 and designing all of the core themes and the admin UI to be mobile friendly. It's great that sort of in that process we've attracted front end developers, and by attracting front end developers we've been able to really sort of polish those things.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a larger than normal amount of excitement around front-end stuff in Drupal during this release cycle. And it's been fun to watch that, like to watch the people working on the Twig stuff get really excited about the theme layer, because for so long it was just like, oh yeah, we have a theme layer. And then there was like 2 years of like, we have a theme layer and we're going to make it awesome. And then like Alex was saying, just bringing in to our community a lot of people who have a strong desire to make the visual side of things good and better is amazing.
And what really turned that around, and it's one of the things that shouldn't be surprising in Drupal 8 and it shouldn't be a big deal, but is, Drupal 6's theme layer was written by developers based on what we think themers will like and what we think, themers want to be able to do. And Drupal 7's theme layer was built on, okay, they didn't like that. They still didn't have enough flexibility, so let's try this now. And themers hated it even more. So for Drupal 8, we said, all right, we need to start over. Themers, what do you actually want? Here's some ideas. Which of them do you actually want? Tell us what to do and we'll do it. And what the resounding message came back was, we want Twig. And so the core team went, okay, Twig it is. And that then got an enormous number of people involved. I mean, I think Twig wasn't an official initiative, but I think it may have had more people involved than any of the official initiatives. including an enormous number of people that Morton DK just corralled and forced into the issue queue to say, dude, themers, this is our chance to get what we want. And just the amount of energy around that has been phenomenal, because we said, all right, themers are the ones that are going to be using this. Let's do what they want rather than what we think they want. And that was very successful.
It's kind of a nice measurement for you're doing something right when all of a sudden everyone stands behind you and starts shouting, like, you're doing this right and we appreciate it. Yeah. We saw a lot of that happen for sure with the Twig stuff. I think that, like, kind of along those lines, just talking about big overhauls to systems like that, and part of that being driven by the desire to create a theme system or a theme layer in Drupal that is easier for people to understand and get started with. I'm excited about the fact that there's been so much effort, especially in the last couple of months, I feel like, but throughout the whole development of Drupal 8, effort in trying to improve the developer experience in Drupal, just simplifying things and making it so that it's easier to, as a developer, understand how different aspects of the system work. And one of the examples that really stands out for me with when thinking about that is on the module development side of things. When you want to create a form now, one of the ways that you can do so is by implementing a form interface. And the nice thing about this for me is I'm implementing an interface which has a certain number of different methods that if I don't implement them, PHP is going to give me an error and complain about the fact that, like, hey, you forgot to include a submit handler. Whereas in previous versions of Drupal, like, you could still accomplish all of these things. You could have code that gets called when your form is submitted and executed. But a little bit of it was just you had to know what the convention was. And those things are hard for people to discover. So I think that the things like having interfaces for things is going to really improve that discoverability and learnability of Drupal 8.
I had the same feeling when I was implementing the auth authentication. It also works with an interface, and that was the first time I was facing it in Drupal 8. And yeah, I realized how it's much more easier to guide the developer on how to implement some interface to achieve something in Drupal and how to plug into some event in Drupal core, as instead of implementing an info method that defines as an array with a lot of indexes and callback functions, which is very hard to debug.
Yeah, I think that really speaks to what I think is going to be one of the biggest DX wins in Drupal 8. Most things are now object-oriented, which for some people may be unfamiliar. Once you learn the basics of, hey, here's an interface, here's a class, you fill stuff in, you put it in the right place, I think the DX is going to be a lot better than it was in Drupal 7 because it's so much more self-documenting, so much more self-contained. It helps you along a lot better. One of the common examples I hear cited from people who are starting to work with Drupal 8 is writing field formatters. In Drupal 7, field formatters were, you implement this hook that's not really a hook, and you have to have a switch statement inside it that corresponds to this other hook over here, and then you're going to be doing this weird stuff with a bunch of arrays, and you hope you get it in the right place, and you have to make sure the thing is already loaded, so it has to be in this file. You don't have that anymore, and it's like it used to be five hooks, and they may or may not be required, and you don't actually know. In Drupal 8, it's an object, and there's an interface for it that you have to follow, and there's a base class that does default implementations of everything. Have fun. And that means just building your basic run-of-the-mill formatter gets way easier than it used to be. And I think that speaks to that's something that's been applied to a ton of different systems. The plugin API that's been built into Core now, and there's like 20 examples of it, something like that. Drupal 7, if a given system was extensible, it was extensible in a different way than every other system, and every system had its own little quirks about how it was extensible. And in Drupal 8, everything's a plugin. So, okay, well, not everything's a plugin, but many things are plugins. So, you create a class, follow an interface, and there's a base class you can start from, and that applies to about two-thirds of what you can do to Drupal, is just that pattern over and over again, which means you learn that one pattern, and you can now interface with, no pun intended, you know, 18 different systems in core. Contrib's going to follow suit, so that's another 30. It makes it, the amount you have to learn to get really good with Drupal goes down. And even for things that are not plugins, things are a lot more discrete and broken out, which means they're easier to learn bits and pieces of, and it's easier to decide, okay, I need to change this one piece so I can change just this one object rather than try and alter an alter of an alter that some other module altered. So I think overall, once people get over the hump of, oh, it's object-oriented now, the developer experience for Drupal 8 is going to blow Drupal 7 out of the water.
Yeah, and I think one other sort of example of that that Larry didn't mention is entities. Drupal 7 was sort of the first version that had a sort of an entity API added onto it at the very end, and so it was very incomplete. And therefore the various kinds of entities that are in the system weren't very consistent. So for example, the hooks that you had to write if you wanted to hook into like the saving of a node versus the saving of a user, ended up working in subtly different ways, or even viewing a node versus viewing a user had different signatures. And then the actual implementation of node save and user save, had quirky differences amongst themselves that could, separately from the differences that are actually, real between nodes and users. On top of that, they also just had differences because they were two different code blocks written at different times by different people, and they didn't magically become consistent. And that's just, say nodes and users. But then if you look at things that aren't even entities in Drupal 7, but are still things that are stored in the database, like image styles or text formats, those each were, had their own, variations. And what the entity API system in Drupal 8 is, it was greatly helped by being object-oriented because, we could sort of put all of the commonalities of entities into an entity-based class. We could subclass, a configuration entity versus content entity. So basically things that, things that are configurations like image styles and text formats and views, that aren't stored in the database but are stored in YAML. Those have certain kind of specialities versus content entities, the things that are stored in the databases, nodes, users, taxonomy, terms, comments, and a whole bunch more. And so, you have one base class entity, you have, two generic subclasses for whether it's configuration or content. And then from there, you have subclasses for all of your specific ones. And the code that's in the specific one only needs to deal with what is really, special about that thing, what makes a node different from a user. And that's the code that you put into your node class or your user class. And the process of doing that, results in a lot, lot more code consistency. Which also means all of the hooks that operate on these things, get the same signature, are called at the same point in the operation. And so once you sort of learn what the different operation points are, and how you hook into the viewing of an entity or how you hook into the saving of an entity, once you've learned it once, it applies to, several dozen other entity types that are in core and, maybe up to, I don't know how many dozens or hundreds more throughout Contrib.
So is that true of like config and content entities too? Like once you learn it sounds like this is the case that like once you learn how to hook into a content entity, for example, that same knowledge is going to apply to being able to hook into a configuration entity.
There's a lot of similarities. I mean, they're all, the reason that they're both entities is because they all have, very similar CRUD cycles. They can be, created and saved and deleted. And so all of that, yes, does follow the same, again, the same signature, the same points in the pipeline. There are some differences between configuration and content. The fact that one is stored in the database versus one isn't affects things. Configuration entities are translated in different ways than content entities are. Maybe in Drupal 9 we'll figure out how to unify those, but for now they have different translation APIs behind them. But other than some of those kinds of differences, there's 70% similar, and then 30% different, and most of that 30% difference is because there's an actual difference that matters, and maybe some differences are still because we just haven't achieved, you know, as perfect of a unification as we wanted to.
We're not quite done with Drupal 8 yet, so some of those differences may still get smoothed out, but they're still, you know, far more consistent, far more predictable than they have been in the past. I think it's not something I talked about in the previous iteration of this podcast, but HTML5, one of its big themes is paving the cow paths. You know, figure out what people are actually doing and make that easy, because they're going to keep doing that, so let's just make that easy. And I think a lot of what went into Drupal 8 was, here's what people are already doing contrib, let's just build core on that same model, because that's what people are doing. So, you know, people wanted to make things extensible. The biggest example in contrib was SQL's plugins. So we built a plugin system into core that is inspired by SQL's plugins, but fixes all of the problems they had. So now you can use that same pattern for everything because we know it worked.
But I think it also allows us to sort of standardize on patterns too.
Exactly.
What we deal with in Drupal 7 a lot is that configuration here is a good example where there's, in Drupal 7, there's like approximately 1.6 billion different ways you can export data from the database into code. And then Drupal 8, it's kind of, we realized, okay, the cow path here is people want to get that configuration out of the database and into code. Let's provide them a way to do it. Let's put it in core. Let's make it a easy to understand and use API. They only have to learn one pattern then. So so now it'll be presumably much easier for me in my custom code to implement something that is exportable or just is saved into files. I only have to learn the API to do it once, and I can make use of it every time, rather than now you're in the scenario where like, okay, I know there's like five different ways I could do this. Which of the five is the best way depending on my certain scenario? I think that kind of consistency is going to be super awesome.
Yeah, like for example, for configuration, you know, for when you're dealing with some piece of configuration, it's really, there's just two kind of branch points. You know, it's is it an entity or is it a single piece of configuration? Like a single, you know, like for example, is it the settings configuration for your module? So it's sort of, you know, if you think of it as an object or a file that's on your system, it's one file. It can only be one. It can't be zero or more than one. You know, that goes through sort of one kind of, you know, basic configuration API that's really, really simple. I mean, you just have an object, you call set on it or get on it and save on it. It's a very, very easy API to deal with settings form. It's essentially what replaces variable get, variable set from Drupal 7. And, you know, or do you have something that's a configuration entity, meaning there can be, you know, zero to as many as there are. So, you know, things that you build, like image styles, text formats, views, you know, anything that you can create multiple instances of. And then those go through something that's a lot more like the entity API rather than through sort of accessing configuration directly. But, you know, that's your only branch point. Is it like a simple settings thing that exists only in one object, or is it an entity? And once you've decided that, then like regardless what module you're writing, it's, you know, across modules, there'll be a huge amount of consistency.
I think it also points to purpose-built tools. Alex mentioned the variable get, variable set. In Drupal 7 and earlier, those were basically, I mean, variable get began life as simple configuration. It turned into, I'm going to dump stuff here because I'm too lazy to write a database table for it. And so it ended up being used for all kinds of stuff that really weighed down the system. In Drupal 8, you have, you know, actual configuration, which is purpose-built as deployable configuration. You have config entities, which are purpose-built as deployable configuration that you can spawn more of through the UI, like, you know, text formats, views, that sort of thing. And there's also things that you just need to track but are not really configuration, like the last time cron was run or the last time you ran a certain queue or stuff like that. And for that, there's a totally new system called state that is just a simple key value store for tracking that kind of stuff, because it never belonged in the variable system, but people kept using the variable system because that was all we had. So now we have something better that's new, but serves a purpose that, you know, serves a use case that we know exists, and it's going to be able to do it a lot better than you know, misusing the variable system like everybody was doing in the past. So there's a lot of that kind of, okay, we know this problem is here, let's actually solve it in core and do it well, that's going on.
Larry, I wasn't aware of that state API. When was that committed into core?
Year and a half ago, maybe a year ago.
Oh, really? I've been using it and I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. Yeah, a lot of people don't know it's there. That's why I mention it, because I think it speaks to, you know, hey, it's not just this one hammer that you're going to use for everything, the way like hooks were the answer to all extensibility. It's, we now have a full toolkit of hammers and screwdrivers and drills and power saws that are designed for different use cases and designed for doing different things, but they're all really good at that thing. And you've got all of them available to you instead of just, hey, here's this hammer with, you know, a screwdriver on the back end. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to, again, make it a lot easier to work with, because you can recognize, this is a nail, I will use the hammer. This is a screw, I'm going to use plugins. This is a, an event, so I'm going to use a power saw. And, you know, that kind of purpose-built tool, I think, builds a better generic toolbox.
I like the term toolkit there, and that totally like rings home for me, that idea of like a toolbox full of different purpose-built tools and being able to use the right thing for the right task. And it's not like this is a brand new concept in Drupal. We've certainly tried to create these kind of reusable tools in the past, but I think Drupal 8 does a good job of, again, just kind of improving on what we've got or what we have had in the past, and in so many different ways too. One of the examples that I'm coming up with is on the user interface side of things, there's the whole drop button, I guess you would call it. But we saw it a lot with a couple of different contrib modules in Drupal 7, like views is a good example of this. I think maybe the concept came from CTools, but you, most likely place you've seen it is views, and it's that button that says edit unless you click the little arrow next to it, and then it drops down a list of a handful of other things that you might want to do with that particular element. So now there is a drop button tool in Drupal core, and it's become this like standardized pattern for, if you have more than one option for a thing in a list, this is the way that we implement that. And it provides not only a consistent tool for me as a developer to use, but it's going to be great for end users and people that are learning to use Drupal, because we're putting consistent user interfaces in front of them that, like, it'll just make sense. If you've learned it once, you know that pattern. Oh, behind this arrow, there are other options that apply to this row in this table. And I think there's so many examples of tools like that. It's really great.
And because they were built deliberately in core, that means we were able to take the time and do things like, you know, make sure those drop buttons are accessible. And I'm assuming that was the case for drop buttons, because they wouldn't have gotten in otherwise. But, you know, if you want to make sure your site's accessible, you use those existing tools in the UI. And just like, you know, FAPI, you know, the Form API has always made sure you had a label element. If you use the drop button, you'll make sure that it's always going to, you know, degrade nicely for people who don't have JavaScript. It's going to work nicely for people with a speech-based browser. And that kind of stuff's just taken care of for you. So you can just use the tool and all that stuff is covered.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wanted to sort of circle back a little bit. We were talking just about creating consistent interfaces for, all kinds of things at this point. But one of the things we were talking about is creating a consistent way of managing and dealing with entities in Drupal. And I know that, so I don't know a whole lot about this, but I know one of the things that's allowed for Drupal 8 to do is have a REST module, which provides entities as a REST service. So you can get your node as JSON content. And I know that Wampy, that you've been working on that or done some work with that. And I was curious, like, what gets you excited about having a REST module in core, and why the interest in working on that?
It is so easy to set up an API in Drupal 8 and even authenticate it and make it safe. It's just, it used to be tricky in Drupal 7. I don't know, you would just maybe, there are like three or four modules that more or less help you setting up an API. services would be the most extensible one of them. Other ones, I don't know, the ones I just off the top of my head, REST-AWS or NTT, I forgot the other two. Anyway, and I've been doing with Sally Young some work in seeing how to, looking for ways of decoupling the front end in Drupal so we can just use the Drupal's back end for potential projects and implement the front end as yet another client for the API, as considering that we will have also to offer data from the back end to other sources. And let's say 6 months ago, I started checking out how REST module does it, and I really liked it, although I wanted to help on it because I wanted to change some of the things, such as, for example, there was no authentication apart from HTTP basic or cookie based. So I ported OAuth, so you can just hand a client website, a pair of keys, so it can access your API safely. You should add also HTTPS on top of that. But anyway, that would be a way for you to authenticate requests in a standard way using OAuth module. And then there is a lot of stuff to do yet. But so far, yeah, with just REST module, there is REST UI, which is a little UI I built to just enable and disable resources for your API and define which formats and which authentication methods you want to provide for each of these. It's very easy to set it up and get moving.
So you can now authenticate as a user of the Drupal site via the API. So I could ostensibly log in as an administrator and access the data. So I know I can access the data with the REST API. Does it also support like creating or making changes? Like, is it a full CRUD API or is it just read?
Yeah, it's a full CRUD API. The way you do it is you create let's say I want to offer a particular client access to deal with, for example, the node content type, so it can delete, retrieve, create, and update. So I would create a user, a Drupal user for this guy, and create a pair of keys through the OAuth module. This would be just like a new tab in the user profile, and hand these keys to the user. And then at the user Drupal user roles, a REST module defines a set of roles per resource. So you would have access content node or on REST resources, or create nodes for through REST resources or update nodes. So Drupal, when it receives a request, it will authenticate the user and check, well, so does this user have permissions to access this resource, which is creating a new node? Yeah, okay. Then hand it off to the specific handler to create the node. That's it. Yeah.
That's awesome. I don't have a ton of experience working with, like, creating APIs in Drupal, but it's something that I'm definitely interested in doing more of in the future. And I know for me, that's one of those, like, I'm excited about the fact that these tools exist in Drupal 8 and getting to start to make use of them. And it sounds like you can make use of them fairly easily, at least the basics of it, which is awesome.
Yeah, there will be a link to the authentication in the podcast details, just in case anybody wants to start playing around. We need more feedback for this. So yeah. Feel free to test it.
Cool.
The important notes there, Drupal 8 is not a complete and full-featured do-everything RESTful API, but all the plumbing is there, and there's a start of one for content. So if you want to truly build your site's REST API on top of that, half the work is already done for you. And the other half, there's a very straightforward way to do so. So it's not like you can flip on Drupal 8 and poof, you've got your entire website as a complete full-fledged REST API. But the annoying parts are already done, and there's an obvious way to do the rest of them. So you can build that rest of it yourself, no pun intended, in a very obvious and straightforward way.
Well, I think that's kind of the case with like most of Drupal, right? It's not like you expect to just turn on Drupal and poof, you've got a magic website and it does everything you need it to. There's always going to be a bit of configuration that you need to do in setting things up for your specific use case, but having that framework to do so is, it's what makes Drupal so powerful.
And that's what distributions are for.
So I was just going to say that Drupal 8, it may not poof when you have a website, but it certainly brought us a lot closer than in the past. I mean, one of the biggest things that is exciting about Drupal 8 is some of the stuff that's finally in core that just makes sense to be in core. If you're installing a single module 99.9% of the time, such as Views, the little wins like having Views in core, WYSIWYG in core, parts of most of Dayton core, those types of things are pretty exciting because it just makes it way more useful out of the box. I mean, think back in what, like Drupal 6 something? Just to have a calendar pop-up to insert a date was like four modules, jQuery update, this module, that module. And now I was playing with Drupal to do a blog post on WYSIWYG and looked around and we've already got all that type of stuff in core. So, I mean, I'm really excited as a site builder. The amount of things that are, the amount of tools that are already there that I don't have to go download, configure, and install. So, I mean, we've been discussing a lot of powerful backend stuff, but there's a lot of powerful, I guess, front end tools that are pretty much there already.
I think Drupal 8 is going to be the first version of Drupal where core is useful on its own. You know, Drupal 7 earlier, core is all well and good, but to actually get anything done, it's core plus the standard 20 modules. In Drupal 8, it's core, and you can do a lot with just core.
Yeah, and I think it's actually helped give Drupal like a really great focus as a result. Like, there's, I think Drupal will continue to be, contrib is ultimately what, a big part of why people use Drupal is because of just, no matter how sort of edge case your need is, there might be, there likely is a contrib module that deals with it or a combination of them. So a healthy contrib ecosystem is a huge, huge part of Drupal's success. But I feel like, with prior versions of Drupal, it's we sort of relied on it too much. It's like Drupal core was a sort of a platform for contrib to be able to do stuff, but it wasn't clear what Drupal core was capable of doing. What its focus even is. Other than being a really great platform for contrib, it was hard to really sort of pinpoint what it actually does out of the box. And with Drupal 8, I feel like the focus really is on structured content, which is, I think, the perfect focus for Drupal or for a CMS to have. It's about the fact that you can model all your different content that's on the site, through these different kinds of entities that we have. And then you can field them, and you can field all of them. And we've included, pretty much all of the very, very common field types in. So we now have, image fields and text fields, but also, date and entity reference and email and link and telephone and, numbers and, enumerated lists and sort of, if you look at sort of the combination of field types that are available and entity types that are available in core, you can model, with core alone, you can model, maybe not any type of website, but, a pretty large collection of kinds of websites that are out there. And what's great about doing, and then all of the tools around it sort of support the structured content paradigm. So REST module, allows for manipulating that content, via web services, and multilingual is built in. So now all of that content that you've created and modeled, can be translated through unified interfaces. But also, if you look at the way we added WYSIWYG, people have been clamoring for WYSIWYG in many versions, but WYSIWYG has always been hard, partly because it sort of breaks. It's traditionally braked your Braked, that's not a word, broken, your content model. Suddenly, if you just used, WYSIWYG editors from a couple of years ago, what you put in there, whether it was lists or making things, bold or God forbid, actually adding tables, suddenly, you had a lot of just presentation level HTML now in your content, and now all the work that you did in modeling your content through fields was messed up. And now whatever you put into, if you put a whole bunch of markup into your body field, you know, now try having that look right on a mobile device or on some other kind of crazy device. Whereas what, you know, CK Editor 4 allows us to do, and this was, you know, through a partnership between some Drupal developers and the CK Editor team, is, you know, it's much more structured content oriented. So you can get all the benefits of a WYSIWYG editor, but you can configure it in such a way that the data that goes into there continues to be semantic, and can still be, you know, transformed through, you know, through filter rules easily into vastly different presentation formats.
I think that's another really important thing to note about with Drupal 8. I'll just say, if you're a content strategist, this is your system. You know, if what you want is good content modeling and good content structure and, you know, tools for maintaining that kind of structure, Drupal 8 is the system for you. This is the system that Jeff Eaton should be dreaming of. And
I think it'll be interesting to see how, like, having these tools in core and for us to be able to, I think, promote that a little more and have a bit more discussion and material that kind of discusses these are the things that you can now do with Drupal 8. And just will more people that stumble across Drupal stick with it because their first experience with it is a really positive, it can do all of these really great things. Whereas right now, yes, it can do a lot of the same things and it's a really great tool, but you might not know that when you first stumble across it because it often requires installing a bunch of contrib modules in order to get that level of functionality. And so are we going to be able to attract and keep more of the people that just kind of casually came across it and now realize, oh, wow, there's a lot going on here and I can do a lot with this platform?
I'd like to think so. I think, you know, there's certainly the potential there.
Yeah.
Something else Alex said that I think is also worth highlighting. He said some of the capabilities in CK Editor that we're using came about from a collaboration and partnership between Drupal and the CK team. There were people working together on both sides of that to improve both systems. And that's another trend in all of Drupal 8. You know, people have heard a lot about Drupal 8 using Symfony. We're using some Symfony components, Symfony being another open source PHP framework. We're not using the entire system. We're using bits and pieces of it. And Drupal developers have been working on Symfony to improve the parts of Symfony we're using that we benefit from, and so does everyone else. The same is true with Guzzle, which is a HTTP client that we've included to replace Drupal HTTP request function. Guzzle made changes to be more compatible with Drupal that made Guzzle better. We're using the Zend RSS and Atom parser, the Zend feed library. And they made changes to that system or to that component in order to make it more Drupal friendly. So we've been collaborating with more other projects than ever before in, frankly, PHP history, to say nothing of just Drupal history. And that's something that everyone involved has benefited from. You know, Symfony, Drupal, CK Editor, Guzzle, Zend, all of these projects have been able to collaborate and build a better complete system and better individual pieces. And that's something that's new for PHP. And I think Drupal 8 is really at the forefront of showing just how powerful that can be and just how important that kind of collaboration is to the future of our industry.
I can admit that the thing that hooked me into Drupal core was, and it was, this was in Drupal 8, it was that fact of getting Symfony 2 in it, because before doing Drupal I was a Symfony developer, Symfony 1, and even though Symfony 2 has changed a lot of things in its core, and Symfony framework is an MVC platform, but the components we're using use some of these concepts in it, and that was actually got me this feeling of, hey, now I can do something with this because we are starting to use things that I used in the past. I really liked and I missed them in Drupal, and I think I can help with it. So that makes me also wonder that people that maybe have never worked with Drupal before, but they have worked with other technologies, modern technologies, or maybe not so modern technologies because the stuff we're using is not that new, may think, okay, this is not that different from some other stuff I have been doing before. My first experience with Drupal 6 was like, what the hell is this? And I think this feeling is going to change. And it's going to actually, well, I think it's happening. Numbers are saying it. We have a lot of new contributors for this new release.
And I actually have been going to a lot of non-Drupal conferences in the past year and a half, other PHP conferences or Symfony conferences. And I know there's other Drupal developers that have as well. And the general attitude from outside the Drupal community, from the rest of the developer community that we're seeing is, wow, I had written Drupal off, but I should look at this again. It sounds cool now. And that's exactly what we were hoping would happen. Making Drupal more approachable to more developers will bring in more people to the project, which every project lives and dies by its community.
And at the same time, for people who are sort of existing Drupal developers, I think there's quite a number that are worried about all the changes and learning things that are unfamiliar and wondering how much needs to be learned. It's like, okay, because Drupal 8 brought in all these Symfony components, do you have to learn the details of those Symfony components? And I'd say, no, there's, you can do it like learning anything, like learning any prior version of Drupal or like learning anything in life. You can do it one step at a time and you don't need to, you don't need to know all of it, in order to be productive. You don't need to know the details of all of, every single line of CK editor's JavaScript code in order to write content into a WYSIWYG editor. And similarly, you don't need to know the details of all of the Symfony components that we've brought in order to do, most of the kinds of contrib modules that are out there. There's a few things, you'll need to learn. You'll need to learn the format of the routing YAML file and maybe the services YAML file, but those are fairly easy YAML file formats to learn. And then if you're new to sort of putting code into classes and namespaces, you'll have to learn that. But there's lots of resources on how to do that, both, outside of the Drupal community. There's, thousands of PHP books. And also within the Drupal community, we've been, starting to get documentation written and tutorials written. I know Joe was one of the first to write a tutorial like many months ago on this, just to sort of, for anyone who wants to get over that very initial hump of just, I'm used to having code in this function and now I need to, wrap a class around it and then from there you can go, further, you can start writing forms and you can start accessing the dollar this variable and if you want to take it further and get into, dependency injection and writing unit tests and helping debug, the ins and outs of the routing system, or you can go there, but you don't have to. And so I just wanted to make that point.
And that's actually another good thing to note. As you said, Joe had a tutorial. Alex, I think you've written some articles. If you just follow Drupal Planet, there's Drupal 8 tutorials every single day from somebody. There's training events happening at camps. My company, Palantir.net, we're offering training seminars now on Drupal 8. I'm sure Lullabot's probably going to be soon as well. There hasn't been a great deal of, training material on Drupal 8 yet because it wasn't stable. In the last 2 months or so, that's really spun around. And there's a lot of information that's coming out now, documentation on Drupal.org, blog posts, articles, podcasts, video casts, screencasts, training seminars. There's a lot of information coming on that. So, if you're worried that there will be resources to help you learn, there will be.
I think that as things start to stabilize more and more, we start to get more people that haven't been involved with Drupal 8 development since the beginning that are now coming in and checking things out, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, this is actually really cool. And I'm going to spend some time writing about my experience learning it. I know for myself that in the past, in Drupal 7, I was much more involved with core work than I have been with Drupal 8. In Drupal 8, it's been a lot of mostly just kind of on the fringes and trying to keep up with what's going on, but not really a lot of on the ground getting my hands dirty until a couple of months ago when I needed to write a tutorial about it, and I started getting interested in learning more, and it's been a really fun experience for me. And I think part of it is the fact that it's different and it's new and it's the same way that, you know, Node.js comes out and everybody gets really excited that there's this crazy cool new technology that you can do all kinds of new stuff with, and it's just, it's different than what you normally do, and so you get really excited because you get to play with and try something new. And for me, Drupal 8 has kind of felt like that, and the more I dig into it, like every time I find something new that's exciting. And I was totally intimidated by some of the object-oriented programming stuff and dependency injection. Like, I stayed away from that for months because I wasn't really sure that I even wanted to learn what that was. And then I was like, well, I need to learn what it was. And I realized, oh, this is just a fancy name for things I've already been doing. That's pretty cool. And it's just been super exciting for me to get more and more into it. And that, like you said, you know, you start on the surface, try some simple thing like implement a hook or create your first plugin. And each time you try something new, you get a little bit further into it. And every time I do, I keep discovering new tools, new exciting things. And it's been great.
It's pretty obvious how excited we are, because we could probably just keep this podcast going and going and going. But I'm going to start to wrap it up now. Just we try to keep it under 45 minutes. We've gone a little over because, I don't know, we're just all got different things we like to talk about when it comes to Drupal 8. I do just want to mention, because I said it in my blog post about the first failure of this recording, and I brought up the concept of the chameleon donkey, human and ant, and just to remove the confusion behind that. And the first time we did this podcast, we had notes of questions we might want to ask, and Joe had a question about what animal do we think or represents Drupal 8, and that was kind of everybody's answer. I don't know if anybody wants to clarify their answer or not, or just leave it at everybody wondering why it's a cross between a donkey, a human, a chameleon, and an ant. I'll leave that open for a second if anybody wants to clarify that. Other words, I mean, I just want to thank everybody for not only doing this once, but doing it twice, and it was actually a fun podcast. I don't care that we had to do it twice, because Drupal 8 is looking sweet, and I'm excited for it. I can't wait to start using new tools and doing new things with it and learning more. I mean, Joe's been just going crazy learning, and it's just been a lot of fun. So, but I'd like to thank you guys for coming on again.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and own up to the ant. As it, you know, Drupal 8 is like army ants, because each individual piece is not all that strong, not all that powerful. But working together in tandem and coordinated are incredibly strong and powerful and can conquer small villages.
Very cool.
I like that. That's an awesome metaphor.
Yeah.
And they can conquer small villages. Yeah, I will own up to having said that Drupal 8 is like a donkey. And now, of course, for the life of me, I can't remember why on the spot I decided that it was like a donkey. But I think it had something to do with the fact that I felt that Drupal 8 is approachable, and that it, like a donkey, it oh man, here we go. Like a donkey.
You did Drupal it so well last seems, time. Come on.
It seems really friendly from a distance, and you can walk up and you can say hello and it'll respond generally pretty nicely. And while that first impression is kind of like, oh, just nice little friendly tool, you can, once you start to understand it and once you start to speak its language, you can teach it all kinds of new tricks. And then it becomes this very, very powerful tool that can do things like carry your packs up a mountain for you. But it's not just a donkey that stands in the field. This metaphor is going terrible, so I'm going to end right there. Ta-da!
For me, it's a chameleon, because we are not going to get rid of all the technical debt that we have from previous versions. For example, we will be shipping with both events, symphony events and hooks, and therefore for me it's a chameleon, because it will be able to render itself as a world of all arrays and hooks, and it will be also be able to render as a sexy object orientation programming animal.
Okay, and I gotta own up to, in true open source fashion, human is actually one that I stole, which in open source land is okay to do as long as you attribute it. So that actually comes from Catch, you know, Drupal 8 release manager. Who very early in the Drupal 8 cycle, maybe even before Drupal 8 was opened, wrote a blog post, I think, basically giving the analogy of Drupal to being a human, because humans have, you know, such a breadth of skills and the ability to adapt to so many different environments. And so I think, you know, when we think about Drupal and, you know, we have these debates all the time, I think, in the community of, well, should it be a framework or a product or a platform? You know, and a lot of times the answer is it's all of those things. You know, should it be tailored? You know, do you do small sites with it, large sites with it? You know, and it can do both. And I think that that ability for Drupal to have such, you know, a range of what it can do and a range of what kinds of environments it can do it in makes it like a human.
Very cool. Thanks, guys. I mean, I know Drupalize Me has had pony stickers, but I highly doubt we're going to have a sticker of a cross between a donkey, a human, a chameleon, and an ant. So, but
challenge accepted.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a new illustrator now. This could be pretty good.
That is true, but very cool. Okay. Again, thank you very much, guys, and everyone, thank you for listening.
Thank you. And I will say, I miss your old cue music.
We'll work on it. That was me. Uh-huh. That's all me. I brought the voice back, and I just changed the music a little bit. Maybe we'll put a poll up.
Your old music sounded like a Futurama episode, which I like.
All right, thanks, everybody.